Hello, welcome to The Signal. I'm Rose Murphy.
And I'm Nathan Horn. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
This is our last show of 2020, and we've got some great stories lined up for you.
Today, critics condemn the official response to Halifax's housing crisis.
There's just been a lot of inaction, and that's really frustrating to folks. And there's a recognition that housing is not just a human right, but it's also a really basic human need.
We'll hear about a grassroots movement to meet that need.
And new help for young people without enough food to eat.
At home, you know, they have a home, they have a roof over their head, but there's no food in their fridge.
A new beginning for a Lower Sackville charity putting food in hungry bellies.
Plus later, critiquing a lack of female presence in philosophy programs.
Every week I would go to that class and realize the things that were inadequate in my education, and it would make me upset.
How a St. Effects philosophy grad is trying to shake things up. All that and more on today's show.
But first, the restrictions to slow down the recent COVID-19 outbreaks in the Halifax area appear to be working. Numbers of new infections are dropping. There's another tool to help control the pandemic that may or may not be working effectively, the federal government's COVID Alert app. It became available to Nova Scotians in October, but it's not clear how many of them are using it. I went downtown to try and get a sense of that.
It was quiet in downtown Halifax, but a few people on the sidewalks were willing to talk about their experience with the COVID Alert app.
My phone is 5 years old, it wouldn't work.
I haven't downloaded it.
No, but my family has.
Yeah, I do have it.
No, I haven't actually.
When the app is downloaded to a phone, it lets you know whether you were close to someone with COVID for more than 15 minutes, and potentially at risk for infection. For privacy reasons, the federal government can't say how many Nova Scotians have downloaded the app. It's not scientific, but only about 1 in 4 of the people on Spring Garden Road who were asked said they downloaded the app. That's not far off from the national picture. Only 1 in 5 of the 30 million adults in the country has downloaded it, according to Darren Fisher. He's the parliamentary secretary to the federal minister of health, Patty Hadou.
That hesitancy, I think, comes from people that may not be aware of the lengths that the government has gone to ensure that they are protecting their privacy.
Health Canada says the app has strong privacy measures. It doesn't track people's identity, personal information, or locations, just proximity to anyone who tests positive and enters a code to indicate that. For Fisher, the app is a success regardless of the number of downloads.
You know, if this exposure app sends, you know, a handful of people to get tested and they find out that they're positive while being asymptomatic, and they slowed the spread in their community, then this app has been successful.
Still, the more people who download the app, the more effective it can be.
Thanks for that, Nathan. The number of chronically homeless people in Halifax has more than doubled in the past year. That's according to the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia. Now, volunteers say they're having to step in with a temporary solution because those responsible aren't doing the job. Sarah Moore explains.
In Toronto, a carpenter is building small mobile shelters for some of the city's homeless. He's featured in this CBC video on that city's housing crisis. Now some people in Nova Scotia are exploring the same idea to help people stuck in the cold this winter. A volunteer group called Halifax Mutual Aid is asking for donations and supplies to build small, watertight, insulated shelters. They'll be placed temporarily on private property with permission from landowners. The group declined an interview, but their mission statement says their effort is because of the, quote, inadequacy, corruption, and incompetence of municipal and provincial officials to solve this crisis. Lisa Roberts is the NDP housing spokesperson. She says people are desperate to relieve the suffering of their fellow citizens.
There's just been a lot of inaction, and that's really frustrating to folks. And there's a recognition that housing is not just a human right, but it's also a really basic human need.
And the number of people in need is on the rise. According to the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia, 490 people in Halifax are experiencing homelessness. Kevin Hooper works for United Way Halifax. The charity supports the idea of tiny houses, complete with kitchen and bathroom, to relieve the housing crisis. But Hooper is not sure the idea of temporary sleeping shelters on private property is the answer.
people respond with emotion, and that isn't always enough. A lot of people underappreciate how challenging this type of work can be.
It's not just a matter of giving people a place to stay until they get back to economic stability. He says other factors, like mental health problems or trauma, make things more complicated.
Those people don't go away necessarily the day you say, hey, this isn't working, we need to call it off.
He has no doubt that there will be conflict between landowners, neighbors, or the tenants themselves.
The crisis demands that we either let an increasing number of people fend for themselves on the streets, or we do what we can. But I think that even doing what we can needs to be a thoughtful effort.
He says that means going beyond stopgap measures and finding long-term solutions to house the homeless. For The Signal, I'm Sarah Moore.
Meanwhile, a nonprofit group that's trying to address homelessness and hunger among youth in Lower Sackville got some great news recently. After operating out of a borrowed food truck, Freedom Kitchen has received two grants that are allowing it to build a permanent facility. Rainey Murphy is the director of Freedom Kitchen. I spoke to her earlier. Welcome to The Signal, Rainey. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Nathan.
Tell me about what you guys do at the Freedom Kitchen.
Well, we're Freedom Kitchen and Closet. We're located in Lower Sackville in front of the Knox United Church building. For the past year and a half, we've been serving the community with a focus on the homeless and at-risk youth in Lower Sackville. Our church, Knox United Church, hosts a monthly meal called the Come Meal. And people would come into the church and be served like they were at a five-star restaurant. One thing we noticed is there was no youth coming to the event. Church can be a big, scary place for a lot of these kids. So we decided, after seeing all the news releases of kids found in dumpsters in Lower Sackville, kids living in the woods in tents, we decided if they're not going to come to us, we have to go to them. So we came up with the idea of the food truck, and we started parking over at the library. So that was about a whole year of parking over at the library with a food truck. When COVID hit, we actually lost our food truck to the Salvation Army because they had pop-up shelters that came into Halifax and Dartmouth, and they were called to serve these pop-up shelters and everyone that was staying in the shelters. So we were just standing there like, what are we going to do, guys? And a lovely lady named Nina said, I'm not using my food truck. Would you guys like to use it? So we've been using her food truck since March now. And we can't continue to use her food truck. We can't take the wear and tear on her food truck. So we decided, let's see if there's any grants out there. We secured a grant with the federal government for $25,000. And for the last 3 weeks, we've been building our own structure. Knox United Church gave us a small piece of property. The structure will be 32 by 24 feet. It'll have a full kitchen in it with a serving window and a full closet. So today we actually laid the groundwork for it. The wood is there and the walls are being put up today. So we're getting really close to that line of opening our door for the first time.
Okay, you recently received $25,000 in grants from the United Way and the federal government. How will this be used?
The $25,000 came from the federal government, and we received an additional $10,000 from the United Way. The $25,000 was to build a permanent structure. So that is underway and should be done in the next couple weeks. The $10,000 was to help provide more food and takeout containers, as that is our biggest expense, is the takeout containers. Usually $100 to $200 a month is just on takeout containers. So $5,000 of the United Way's money is to provide food, and $5,000 is for takeout containers or anything to sustain us, like cookingware and stuff like that.
And why is a permanent structure important to you guys?
It's going to save so much time for us. We don't need that hour in advance to get it all out into the truck. We won't need that hour to an hour and a half at the end of the night to get it into the church from the truck. We can just tidy it all up, close it all up, and away we go for the night. And same with when we open, we cook all that. We'll be cooking there all day, and then opening the window, serving, and there'll be no lugging. It's going to be a lot less work for our volunteers. A number of our volunteers are retired, so it's hard to get somebody to lug everything out. Hundreds and hundreds of pounds of stuff that we have to lug out every Monday night. We did do a survey with the youth. We try to keep the youth in mind with everything that we do. I mean, we do serve up to 400 meals now. Maybe 10% of those are youth from our community, and the rest are people that are just struggling at the moment because of the pandemic. So we did a survey with them just before we made this decision. Would you guys be comfortable to come over to the church? It's not going to be in the church. It's going to be outside of the church. And we had a unanimous answers of we would love to see a new building. A place for us to hang out was a big popular one with the kids. It's something they're going to be able to call their own. We're hoping to gather them together to do a mural on the wall to make it their space, make them comfortable being where we are.
Who comes to mind when you think about someone who needs your services? Are there any stories in particular that stand out to you?
We've had a lot of kids who have told us their personal stories, and I'm talking like between the ages of 12 and 16, who may have a parent at home that is an alcoholic, a drug addict. We've heard a lot about the opiate crisis, and at home, you know, they have a home, they have a roof over their head, but there's no food in their fridge. So, I mean, we started a shoebox program as well, where we fill shoeboxes with food. And if the kids are hungry and don't have food at home, they can come ask for a shoebox. We fill up their backpack with whatever's in the shoebox, and they have a few meals for the week. Now, with COVID and the pandemic, a lot of people are struggling. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people are finding, we have a single mom of four who, you know, usually puts $25 away a month. And by summertime, when her kids are off on break, she can afford that extra breakfast and lunch that her school provides for her, and there's no school, so she's able to afford that because of the extra $400 that she saved through the year. She didn't have the chance to do that this year. The kids were in school for a few months and then they were off, so she really struggled this summer, and Freedom Kitchen was able to provide her with extra meals at the end of the night so that she had food through the week for her kids.
Yeah, this is a particularly hard time of year for people in need. What's the plan for the expected holiday season demand?
We are doing a Christmas dinner on December 21st at the Freedom Kitchen. So we will be providing a full Christmas dinner as well as a gift to everyone that attends. And we are also delivering meals to a couple of the independent senior homes in Lower Sackville that are having issues as well, with monetary donations not coming in because everyone's struggling right now.
If people are inspired, what can they do to help?
They can sign up on our website. It's freedomkitchensackville.com, and you can sign up to be a delivery driver, as we do deliver to 121 seniors and disabled folks in Sackville who can't get out. You can sign up to work in the kitchen. You can sign up to serve on the truck. And at this point, we're not accepting any clothing donations just because of COVID, and we don't have the storage facility yet. When the new building does open, we will be able to accept it because it'll be outside.
That's Rainey Murphy. She's the director of Freedom Kitchen. Again, if you want to help, check out their website. It's freedomkitchensackville.com.
Once upon a pre-COVID time, the Halifax-based quartet Villages was scheduled to play tonight at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel. Like so many other things, that's been postponed. But the band has gone ahead with the release of a new three-track EP called Upon the Horizon. In an article for The East magazine, the band describes the EP's title track as a pure COVID daydream, an attempt to capture a feeling of expansiveness and freedom to combat the isolation and claustrophobia of pandemic restrictions. Here's Villages with their title track, Upon the Horizon.
Upon the horizon, where the orange meets the lake, to our destination with the canteen compass and spade. Ooh, it's a million miles away. Up all night, I'll build a fire and we'll wade water to the waist. Wrapped up in the heat, go back on the beach, watch the lake's crystals caper away. As I gather a pipe and no skin, cast a howl and misty morning. Up all night till the sun comes up on the day. Shelter the embers, keep the coals kindled for the ages. When we're doing nothing, keep on happiness at bay. Watch the lake's crystals caper away. As I gather a pipe and no skin,
cast out a misty morning. Hope all night till the sun comes up on the day. On me, on me, on me. Up all night upon the horizon. Up all night I'll build a fire and we'll wait and water till we wrapped up in the heat. We'll back on the beach, watch the lake's crystals caper away. As I gather a pipe and doorskin, cast a high on a misty morning. As I gather a pipe and doorskin, cast a high.
That's Villages with Upon the Horizon.
You're listening to The Signal on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax. We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Nathan Horn.
And I'm Rose Murphy. Still to come on the show, a big change to a long-standing festival in Newfoundland.
The biggest thing for us is our Mummers Parade can't happen this year in person. And normally there's 20,000 people, you know, on the go on St. John's Parade Day.
And a story about online startups and how they can thrive during and after a pandemic.
People can't go out. We can't go to stores. We can't connect socially. So we're looking for ways to connect online.
That's still ahead.
In Antigonish, a recent St. FX grad is challenging the lack of female representation in the university's philosophy department. She says the 8-man faculty and the books they teach don't reflect the experience of women. Now she's back in Antigonish and leading a group that's trying to address that gap.
Leah Gray was a star of the St. FX Philosophy Department, co-president of the Student Philosophy Society, and winner of the department's highest award. She loved the program, but she felt something important was missing. There were no women professors and very few women writers on the reading lists.
When I mentioned issues of gender representation, I was always kind of told that there was a duty to the canon and that gender is not an issue in philosophy at all.
After doing a master's degree in feminist philosophy in Guelph, she returned to Antigonish earlier this year and started a feminist philosophy reading group. It meets monthly, both in person and online. And she invited students from the St. FX Philosophy Department to participate. Will Sweet is the head of the philosophy department at St. FX. He doesn't see the problem with representation. He says 3 women have taught for short periods in the past.
It's true that right now we don't have any women teaching in the department, but we have, and I anticipate that we probably will. So I don't see that that's a big issue about that.
There are currently 8 male professors in the department. The last female professor taught for 1 year, 6 years ago. Sweet says money is partly to blame, with no tenure track hiring in almost 20 years, but he doesn't think that there's a problem with the list of books students read either. He says it really depends on the course subject matter.
If you look at the course on ethics and human rights, you'll find that there are women, people of color, you'll find people from different cultural traditions and backgrounds in that course. So I think that we do a reasonable job of trying to get diverse voices available to our students.
Of the department's 30 listed courses, only 3 feature women writers or feminist thought. Joanna Black teaches Women and Gender Studies at St. FX.
Part of me is really dismayed and angry that we still even have to make this argument because it's 2020.
She says traditional male perspectives are important, but they're not the whole story. And she thinks people should question what are considered the classics of Western philosophical thought.
We need to rethink the canon. Why is the canon the canon? Who made those decisions, right? It was who was in academia at the time. You know, for many years, women were completely excluded from academia.
Black says the consequence is a limited understanding of ourselves and of our society. Meanwhile, Leah Gray's feminist philosophy group continues its monthly meetings. Gray says she hopes it will give women more control in their everyday lives by giving them the language and tools to clearly understand and articulate their own experiences. And for her, that's ultimately what it's all about.
Interesting story. Thanks, Rose. Here in Halifax, a musician turned online entrepreneur is showing how online startups might pave the way for an economic recovery post-COVID. Leo Bui explains.
Brandon spilled a stain on his jeans 2 years ago, but now that stain has turned into a business. Brandon Todd Parker is a member of the Halifax musical duo, Keen Crew. It had to cancel a Cross Canada tour earlier this year due to the pandemic. And with the lockdown, Brandon had a lot of free time on his hands. So he started a business, and it all began with a little accident.
I spilled the stain on my jeans, and I really liked them and didn't want to throw them out. So then I got this idea to spray paint them instead, and that's kind of how it started, and it just kind of grew from that.
That allowed him to move his creativity from his music to his business.
I started stitching patterns into the jeans as well and putting bandanas and sewing them in, and I mostly stick to spray paint because I think that's the funnest.
He posted a video of that first pair of jeans, and now he's getting lots of orders online. Bill Foster is a professor at the Rose School of Business at Dalhousie University. He's not surprised by Brandon's success. He says the online platform allows people to connect and is probably more successful than a bricks and mortar startup.
People can't go out. We can't go to stores. We can't connect socially. So we're looking for ways to connect online. So that suggests that his business is successful in a sense because of the pandemic, because so many people are trying to find ways to look for people to connect with online.
Foster also says consumers are buying more consciously due to the pandemic. They are purchasing things that have some sort of meaning. He says that favors business with artistic products.
A lot of consumerism is based on looking around at people around you and seeing what they're purchasing and then wanting to keep up. So I think with people being at home and not needing to spend money, if they're going to spend money, it's going to be on something that actually appeals to them in a more emotional or sensory way than before.
Foster says startups and small businesses will be critical in the post-pandemic recovery.
It will look different when we come out of the pandemic, and startups are very good at being able to see opportunities and to solve issues in novel ways by bringing different out-of-the-box ideas to problems, and they can pivot more quickly than the larger companies can.
For Brandon, it is a positive sign his business will continue to thrive, and good news for other online startups as well. For The Signal, I'm Leo Bui.
Mummering has been a Christmas tradition in Newfoundland and Labrador for generations. It involves families and friends dressing in disguise to visit their neighbors around the holidays. In St. John's, the annual Mummers Festival normally includes workshops and other events that draw thousands of people. But this year will be much different. Antonia Whalen reports from St. John's.
This tune is typically played while masked dancers visit a Newfoundland home, a tradition that happens around the province at Christmas time. But not this year. Lynn McShane is the executive director of the Mummers Festival. She says taking the festival online means trying to stay true to the heart of the tradition without the usual excitement of the crowds.
The biggest thing for us is our Mummers Parade can't happen this year in person. And normally there's 20,000 people, you know, on the go on St. John's Parade Day. And we just can't have that, of course, because of regulations. So we've created what we're calling our virtual Mummers Parade, where we've invited people to submit video clips of themselves rigged up as mummers and doing their best mummer marching around their neighborhoods. And we're going to stitch all of those together and create one big virtual Mummers Parade.
She says the videos will be posted to Facebook for all to enjoy. Other festival events will be on Zoom and Facebook as well.
We offer everything from workshops. Our ugly stick and hobby horse workshops are very popular. And then we also offer kind of talks and forums and lectures.
It means that for the first time this year, people are participating from all over Canada and other parts of the world.
We've had people from Pennsylvania, Indianapolis, Boston, and we've also had people from the UK and Ireland as well. From one lady in Saskatchewan has signed up for every single event and activity that we have.
That lady, Jamie Parsons Lewis, is not a native of Newfoundland, but she's been mummering a few times during Christmas visits to the island.
They're just doing such a fantastic job of sharing it, and it's easy to watch and fun to watch and to follow along with them. Being from away, I can actually participate and join in. Although I hope to be there for it to be in person, but it definitely helps us Mummers fans out west that get to join in virtually.
It won't be the same as all the years that have gone before, but McShane says the online festival has shown there's a way to include people from afar, and that will become a part of the festivities going forward. For The Signal, I'm Antonia Whalen in St. John's, Newfoundland.
Thanks, Antonia. And for all you Newfoundlander wannabes, here's Sim and I with the Mummers song.
Don't seem like Christmas if the Mummers are not here. Granny would say as she'd knit in her chair. Things have gone modern, and I suppose that's the cause. Christmas is not like it was. Hark, what's the noise out by the porch door? Granny, tis mummers, there's 20 or more. Her old withered face brightens up with a grin. Any mummers, nice mummers, loud in. Come in, lovely mummers, don't bother the snow. We can wipe up the water, sure, after you go. Sit, if you can, or on some mummer's knee. Let's see if we know who you be. There's big ones and small ones and tall ones and thin. Boys dressed as women and girls dressed as men. Humps on their backs and mitts on their feet. My blizzard, we'll die with the heat. There's only one there that I think that I know. That tall fella standing o'er alongside the stove. He's shaking his fist for to make me not tell. Must be Willie from out on the hill. Now that one's a stranger, if there ever was one, with his underwear stuffed and his trapdoor undone. Is he wearing his mother's big 42 bra? I knows, but I'm not gonna say. Don't suppose you find mummers would turn down a drop. No homebrew or elky, whatever you got. Not the one with his rubber boots on the wrong feet. He's enough for to do him all week. Suppose you can dance, yes, they all nod their heads. They've been tapping their feet ever since they came in. Now that the drinks have been all passed around, the mummers are planking her down. Be careful the lamp and hold on to the stove. Don't swing Granny hard, cause you know that she's old. No need for to care how you buckles the floor, cause mummers have danced here before.
That's our show for today. If there's anything you want to hear again, we'll be posting a link on our social media feeds. Our handle is SignalHFX on Twitter and Instagram.
And this is our last show of the year. We're all heading off on Christmas break, whatever that looks like in this pandemic year. A strange one for sure.
Yes, absolutely. But I hope you have a good break, and happy holidays to everyone out there. I'm Nathan Horn.
And I'm Rose Murphy. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.